Now we'll be fine. And there we are. It's a beautiful thing. So anyway, back to the point, which is Americans don't know. Did you name the band after this infamous campaign?
Who knows?
Maybe.
Is there a better answer than that? Probably not.
Yeah, well, no. I don't think there is a better answer than maybe.
Have animals?
Maybe it's the best kind of answer.
Maybe it's the ultimate answer to any question.
Yeah. And maybe it is. Have any animal rights organizations given you trouble about the name of the band? Like, have you gotten any emails or any letters or any you know what about it?
I'm kind of confused. It seems...
Am I interviewing the wrong band?
You know, it's just quite a few people have been saying that we've been getting. Like, do you mean like have we got a hard time with anyone?
Yeah, like any of the animal right, you know, the people.
Well, that's what I don't understand because quite a few people have been saying that here, but like in Britain, we were told that the RSPCA,
right?
The Royal Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals.
Yes, which is what this is from, by the way, that I read you.
Yeah, well, somebody was saying that they actually put a posting on their sort of website saying
don't buy the record?
No, this is what I don't understand, saying support the band, because we're...
That's kind of backwards.
That's what I don't understand how it is, because it's like we're promoting... the campaign, and not directly, we like the name, it's just as the name, but coincidentally, it's also saying to people, by the way, dogs die in hot cars, and,
yes.
That's how I that's what I don't understand, I don't see
we're
it
never
going
to get to question number two, I can tell.
Thing. I'm confused.
We're just going to stay right here.
I'm confused.
I'm really confused.
Can you clear this up?
Because no,
I'm confused. Because the campaign is dogs die in hot cars, so...
The campaign's not bad, is it?
Is it?
No, I'm just saying that it... Never mind.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Now back to our...
Maybe we shouldn't have called ourselves...
Now back to our regularly scheduled interview. So you're currently doing the West to East Coast tour. So Troubadour in L.A. last night?
Yep.
How was that?
Great.
How was the L.A. crowd? Any celebrities in the crowd?
Loads. They were all...
Millions.
They were all celebrities. All of them.
Because everybody in Los Angeles is?
Yeah.
Everybody in LA is important.
It was good. It was really good. I mean, it's the first time we've been to Los Angeles. First time we've been to San Francisco. The first time we've been to all of these places. I mean, we played in New York, but that's the furthest we've ventured into the States. You know,
it's interesting because I discovered you because I don't even remember which organization it was at South by Southwest, but it was the Promote British Bands We Love You organization put out a CD. And God Hopping was on it. And all I did was, along with
that was the South by Southwest.
Yeah, it was the South by Southwest, along with about 20 other cuts. I had no idea who you were. Popped in the CD. It was track number 3. It came on, and I said, my God, I've got to figure out who these guys are, because this is really fun. This is so what I play. But I didn't know a thing about you back then. So that's how I discovered you, not through reading NME or any of that.
Well, that's the best way of discovering a band.
Well, because I just liked the music. Yeah, and I said, I've got to go after it. And then it was hard to, again, calling England and trying to get it and all of that. So you haven't stopped touring in forever, though, because it's like, from what I read on your site, it's like Australia, back to the UK, New York, Europe, back here.
Yeah.
So you
that's right.
We just finished a 2-week European tour. We were in Paris and then we got the ferry over to London, well, to England, and then flew straight over here. 12-hour flight.
Are you tired of the songs yet?
No.
Good. That was the right answer.
Tired. Yes.
See, that was
not
the right
of the songs, no.
I do every once in a while I catch a band and I say, are you tired of the songs yet? And they say, no. We love all our songs.
We do.
But your journal, the journal on the site is very amusing. Something about a club in England or somewhere that you called the Toilet Club. Because it was like the whole place was like a toilet.
Lawrence, yeah.
It was very, very honest, shall we say.
Yeah, no, well,
what was that?
It
the
actually
biggest
was a toilet
in
but Europe. We'd had this gig in this place called Tunbridge Wells. And we were looking for it, just driving around the city, and And we were driving along by this park, and there was this kind of hexagonal-shaped white building in the park, quite big, and a tour manager was like, that's the venue. And we were like, that can be the venue. It looks like a giant toilet.
As so many
and
do.
And they were like, no, it's the venue. So we were like, okay, well.
Here we are.
Well, we'll trust our tour manager, you know. Still think it's a giant toilet, but. And we went in and it smelled like a giant toilet, but it had a stage and it didn't have toilets. So, and we discovered that before it was a venue, it was Europe's largest public toilet.
So you are proud enough to say that you played in Europe's largest public toilet.
Oh, yes.
Beautiful. Mm. All right. We've done the silly questions. Now, let's get to the ones that people really care about. History of the band, please. The history that I read is it's all pretty amazing because you kind of put out an independent single yourself, and next thing you know, you're on V2 and, you know, big articles in NME, and there you are.
Well, it's kind of a different story from the one I know.
I knew I'd get you there. Go ahead.
we did a limited release with a label under EMI. It was just like a one single release.
Right, right.
The intention of that was to just basically use it as a calling card, you know, to the industry, to record labels and things. And it did, you know, better than we expected because it actually went out and kind of some of the radio shows started to play it and stuff. And so it was good. Anyway, it was great. And you know, we were touring solidly by then. And then we met V2 and a big long story that's quite boring, really. But it was just meeting lots of people and just finding out who's the people we got on with the most, you know. And that was
But okay. So you met as chaps in school, and you know, and formed a band and all that. But this is a slick record. This is not a first. You know, there are records that come out that I hear, and I mean, I get. I don't even want to think about how many CDs a week that I then in turn either sell to a record store or throw in the garbage. Mm. And this thing, from cut to cut to cut, and I'm not saying this to suck up to you because it's not my job to suck up to anybody I interview. Never has been. This thing's slick. I mean, this is for a first out record, this thing's a hit.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Well, no, it is. I mean, that doesn't, now, so there's a lot behind it, but, so what is God Hopping for Good Times? What the heck does that mean?
Maybe.
How do I hop over a God? Is that like, you know, jump roping or?
The word God Hopping means, according to Mrs. Byrne, and from Mrs. Byrne's dictionary, it means to change religion in order to receive aid of the missionaries.
Aid of the missionaries?
Aid
what?
From missionaries.
Off from.
So it's all innocent then?
Yes, of course. It's got nothing to do with God and hopping, but
lots of visuals there.
Sprung into my mind whilst I was.
Yes.
So, and then when I saw this word and. I don't know. I mean, yeah, but it's weird, you know, people say about the debut album and people do, you know, it doesn't seem like a debut album and stuff, but I mean, I don't know, what does that mean, a debut album?
I mean, Meet the Beatles was a pretty good debut album, but, and actually that wasn't their debut album, they did a lot before that.
Yeah, well, that was the thing, you know, we've been playing together for, you know, a long period of time, and we've written so many songs, and like, a year before we recorded that album, we had an album, you know, I mean, we'd done our own releases, like.
So it's not as magical as it seems.
Yeah. Oh. Yes, it is. But
okay,
it's
good.
Just that we've done other things that, you know, that basically what happened is, what I'm saying is, you know, we had material which we would be have been happy releasing as the first album, you know. But as things progress and the new songs replace old songs, you know, because they're more exciting and there's more to them and you're learning and that's kind of what happened with that album. We just kept on, over that, really over the year, prior to recording the
last year,
yeah, basically last year throughout that
you've
year
you've been touring too long, I can tell.
Yeah. Oh, Av, well, it was like you were saying, like, how long you thought we'd been sent to V2 for 2 years or something, so yeah. You gained a year. Like, gained a year. But, so, you know, so these new songs were coming through and they just seemed better and more exciting, and that's kind of what happened. That's that album was pretty much written within that year.
You know? But again, and I say this as a compliment, you know, the maturity factor, I mean, in my NME a couple of weeks ago was the XFM sessions, which is...
And you don't read the NME, do you?
Yes, of course I do. Yes, I know everything about you as a result of the NME and about Razor Light and
so
about
you know,
Libertines.
You know that the NME hate us then?
Of course.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, well,
just thought I'd clear that up.
Yeah, but they still put your XFM session.
Yeah.
No, of Lounger is just, you know, I'm going to play that version this weekend because that was spectacular.
Yeah, see, that's the strange thing about the NME. 1 week they'll be saying something nice about us, and the next week they'll be saying.
Well, it's a musical tattler.
Exactly,
it's good.
Exactly, and it's a good thing. It's a
hey, it's all, but yeah, but you know, NME is a big public relations vehicle. That's all
it's
it is.
It's a big glossy magazine.
It's a big. It's actually because I don't live there. It's very important for me to have the. You know, the dirt. So you can throw some things out, and whether people think they're true or not, makes it part of the part of the fun.
Yeah.
We forgive you.
Did you get to do a John Peel by any chance?
No.
You did an XFM, huh? But you didn't get to do a John Peel session.
Yeah, never.
Oh, and I'm sure he would have had you on too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just a pretty devastating. What was your reaction when you heard about John?
Don't really know because. We were sort of on the road, and it was just kind of. I mean, it's sad, you know. It's yeah. I mean,
I imagine he played
quite,
the record.
Quite important, you know. I mean, he's played a massive part in everything, you know. Recently, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't his, you know, what he was doing wasn't kind of, you know, it was kind of. Blah, blah, blah. But yeah.
No, thank you for finishing that sentence.
It was obviously, you know. It's
okay. Yeah. Now we get to have some fun. Let's look at the CD. Now this is radio, so people who have the CD, you know, they're gonna have to follow along at this moment in time. But the picture on the inside sleeve over the lyrics for Pastime and Lifestyles doesn't exactly match the one for a Glimpse of the Good Life. You know, or really kind of you know, so so I just wanted to get a little bit of editorial comment on the picture with Pastimes. And
do you like my breasts?
Yeah, they're lovely.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Any input you'd like to give for people who, you know, for people who are thinking, you know, there's some really nice art and there's some nice modern art and
my mother painted that picture.
Did she really?
Yeah.
And okay, so back to the they're avoiding the issue. Do you notice this? Back.
We're very, very proud of that, actually. We're very proud of it.
You're very...
Lawrence is extremely proud of it because it's his...
It's his real body.
He was sewing off his... He's very proud of his body. We weren't so proud of our bodies, that's why we...
Decided to have some other stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, the obvious... I'll ask the NME question, or anybody... What is, I mean, your sound. Everybody has found a way to compare you. We could go with XTC. Yeah. We could go, obviously, with the Dexys for obvious reasons. And yet you grew up on grunge, right? You grew up on the Nirvanas and the Soundgardens and all of those bands.
Yeah.
So when you formed this band, and I know Mac would probably have something to say about this, you know, too, but when you guys formed this band... And you said, okay, we're going to form a band, and we, you know, what went in our ears was grunge, and what came out was.
Yeah.
And do aim the microphone at him.
I think it's become a little bit sort of the explanations to where, you know, our sound comes from has become sort of. What would be the word? Kind of dumbed down, I suppose. It's like, I mean, yeah, we're a victim of ourselves. I think we say, yeah, you know, we're into grunge and stuff, but that was then, and you know, we really like a lot of the music that we were listening to back then, and we still do, but maybe not so much for me, you know, not so
but,
much.
But how do you, when you sat down to, when you formed the band, and you said, okay, we're going to write some songs, did you actually turn to each other and say, okay, you know, like, we want to, you know, we don't want to sound like this, we want to be this, or was it just, we're going to write some songs we care about, and put a melody to them, and whatever they come out as, they come out as.
When we first started, like, I bought a guitar and Lawrence bought a drum kit, and I knew two chords and he knew one drum beat, and then we got Craig came down and started screaming into this microphone with this little squeaky voice.
This sounds like The Commitments to me.
So, yeah.
Door maybe, to door, we're looking maybe. For a drummer. Johnny, we need a drummer.
So that was that, and you know, we had a distortion pedal and a lot of the stuff we were writing had that, and kind of over the years, a lot of the bands we were playing with, we were getting kind of frustrated with the way, you know, everyone was kind of, late 90s, everyone was kind of trying to sound like Radiohead, or there was still a lot of people trying to do the Oasis kind of thing, you know. And it was all quite a bit depressing, really, so.
Everybody does want to be somebody else musically, don't they?
No.
No, I disagree.
No, but doesn't it, but no, but I mean, even, okay. Basically, you can divide music up these days, my opinion only, into maybe, you know, a few different divisions, okay? Over in Great Britain, you know, there are a bunch of different sounds, thank goodness. But then in New York, you know, if you don't sound like the Strokes or the AAS, right? And then there's the group over here that wants to sound like the White Stripes, or like you said, Radiohead or whatever, you know, and then there's pop, which we won't even get into because that's not necessarily relevant to what we're talking about. You know, but you guys kind of, you do sound like yourselves. You know, when you hear a Dogs Dying Hard Cars record, I now can tell that it's one of your tracks. There is a sound to it, and it's also about the lyrics, obviously, too. You know, but there is a sound.
Cool, thank you. That's
well, no, I think it's true.
Good compliment.
I think it's true. But that said, you lucked out. You have the Dexys producer, and how much do you think?
It's like falling, right?
I know, but
it's because what's so frustrating about it, right? Is I don't think anyone will believe us.
But here's the question.
None of us own or ever have owned a Dexys Midnight Runners.
So that's what I was.
Nobody believes that, yeah. And then people go, yeah. So then you end up choosing the producer. You know?
The only song we knew was "Come on, Eileen," and we hate it.
Well,
that's not fair.
Well, I hate it. You hate it.
No, I don't hate it. I used to hate what it was associated with, which was
dungarees.
Your uncle's 50th birthday. At the
right, you go to
club.
A party, and next thing you know, they play it. Yeah, over and over.
But the reason we chose those producers wasn't to do with their track record. It was more to do with
how we got on with them.
Yeah, how we got on with them, and we kind of when we met a whole bunch of producers, and we met Clive and. We kind of clicked with him, and we went in the studio and did an EP, and it worked, you know. So
how do you think? So, let me put it this way then: how do you think that he affected your sound? In other words, you walked in and you were this band. What? Because it's an interesting question, because you're saying how much you didn't choose the producer at all for something in the past, because you really weren't listening to all of that. So you chose him because you got on, but then when you got in the studio, what? Did he or didn't do? And by the way, both are relevant because a lot of producers are enormously successful because all they do is let the band do what they do and get it recorded well.
Exactly. I mean, it's difficult to say what would it have been like without them with somebody else. It's not you. No, it's impossible to answer. But how both of them, our relationship with them was, you know, a friendship, and is a friendship, and it was about, and you know, it's, I mean, they say, I mean, Clive's more, Alan's more the kind of engineer sort of sound man, you know, knows how to achieve a certain specific sound, but Clive's a more of the sort of artistic kind of creative one.
So give me an example, just so the audience can kind of hear about the process, because again. The record has come out really well. You know, it's just, it's a very, very, and this is good for me, by the way. This is an easy to listen to, you know, the record rocks, but it doesn't have to challenge me. I can listen to every cut on the record and I don't go, oh man, that cut sucks, you know? Mm-hmm. And you, 80% of the records that I get, if I'm really lucky, I find the one track. I find the one track, and then the record company will call me and say, are you going to dig deeper into the album? And I say, well, I've been at this a long time, and I used to love to dig deeper into albums, but there are very, very few Abbey Roads out there anymore to date myself. Or there are very few, you know, there aren't a lot of records out there that you really can pretty much dig in a pile of cuts, and I'm many cuts into this one already.
Cool.
So what was it, you know, that happened at the session that kind of enabled the record to be as cohesive and you know?
I think that songs are, it's actually our manager that kind of says this. I think if you can make a song sound exciting just by playing it with acoustic guitar and singing it, or with piano and singing it, and then you build from there, that's your foundation.
Because that's
and
a
if
song.
It's, exactly, and if it's interesting from that, then you're okay, you know? And that's how I think that as songs, they're great songs, and obviously because obviously we say that because that's what they're ours, and that's what you do. We're in no intention of writing a shit song, a rubbishy song, and and we're not in the interest of writing, doing fillers. You know, that was that again, talking about the sounds and how we are the way we are, and is it born out of frustrations or influences? And something which frustrated us was that so many albums that we bought had fillers. You know, had three few songs that were great, and the rest that were just okay. You know, and it's like we just didn't want to do that. You know, we wanted every song to be like really on it. And write songs that people could grab. You know, I mean, we think a lot about our songs. You know, they take a long time. I mean, like Apples and Oranges took 6 months from it being this idea that I had in my head, putting it down the computer, to being everyone in the band being happy that it was the best that we could do. You know, and they all kind of took a long time, and we think a hell of a lot about it. You know, I'm very serious about it, but. But we want people to be able to like grab them, you know. I mean, we don't want the last thing. I think what's horrible about art is when you feel uncomfortable and you feel that maybe it's a bit too clever for you, or it's not your thing, you don't get it, or whatever. You know, to me, the best kind of art is when people can embrace it and they can get their heads around something. You know.
That's a huge thing, because I always ask this question. You know, there's a million indie bands that are out there to make their point and to sell 3,000 records, you know, and to be a cult item. And yet the bands that I tend to gravitate were, you know, and some of them are controversial and some of them are not, you know, like people, you know, let's take the poster behind, you know, let's take Keane, right, who we had on. It's like people either love or hate them, but the fact is that they produced a record designed to sell records. The Delays, same thing. They produced a record designed to sell records. Yeah. They wanted to get out there. They wanted to get their art out there.
Yeah.
And they crafted it and they cared.
Yeah, exactly. And it's about doing it in a way that you're, you know, I mean, there's things that, I mean, speaking from a lyrical point of view, you know, there's things that, you know, I want to write, and I spend a lot of time writing and stuff because I think it's important, you know, but it's about doing things in a way that, where you people can grab it, but you're also doing something that, you know, you need to do, but it's like the balance.
So doing something good that people actually want to hear.
Yeah, but it's the balance, though, you know. It's about getting something that's a lot of the music we listen to is maybe would be defined as, say, avant-garde or something, you know, or quite, you know, I mean, just not particularly popular and maybe difficult to it's just not kind of commercial music, you know, and and it's taking all these kind of things and these interesting sounds and interesting ideas and stuff, but then putting it into format which is kind of a pop format, you know. It's the balance about being kind of creative and different, but also being relevant enough to what's happening now, you know.
Well, it's kind of like lyrically they're pretty deep. I mean, they're the lyrics. You really do have to listen, but they are wrapped in melodies that do make it easier to hear the message. And I think that's good. I think it's the way it should be. Which brings me to the obvious question, except we're going to do one that's even more fun because it's a tradition of the show and it always becomes joyful. So you mentioned what you're listening to musically. So what's the music on the bus? What's in the iTunes? And then I'm going to ask you a completely different thing, which is a little bit more fun and kind of something we like to do here. But what are you listening to? What's there? Good and bad.
Good and bad.
Well, I don't listen to bad. Only good.
Unless you think it's good and it becomes bad.
Those two CDs that you got, I've been listening to them.
Yeah.
The Shins.
Mm-hmm.
New album, what's it called?
Shoots Too Narrow.
Yeah, Shoots Too Narrow, yep.
And an album by King Creosote called Kenny and Beth's Musical
Boat Ride.
King Creosote's it's part of the Fence Collective, which is based in Fife, Scotland, where we're from.
There you go.
And he's genius.
I mean, yeah, I think the whole Fence Collective, for anyone, you know, just worth checking out on the internet. It's just they're just a kind of a collective of musicians from where we all kind of grew up. And it's kind of rooted in folk, but it's just amazing. But it's not like folk. It's just like the Beta Band that kind of came from there. And it's just worth checking out. It's really good. Ruth got Britney Spears Greatest Hits.
Thank goodness,
Ruth. But Ruth, I mean, this is the thing, you know. It's like you
there's some diversity for
but,
you.
Well, exactly, and it's like difficult to sort of say, you know, what are we listen to, what are we influenced by? Because you know, it's like Ruth buys Britney Spears, and she'll buy like what's his name, Maller. She's buying like Britney Spears and Maller, you know, this like classical.
Okay, so here's.
She's just, you know, and that's the way it is, you know what I mean? It's just like there's lots of good in it. Even, you know, Britney Spears.
There's even good in Britney. So yeah, there's even good definitely in Britney Spears. And the look from the gentleman from the record company was priceless at that very moment.
Yeah.
Can I?
You don't believe that, do you? That there's even good in Britney Spears. I guess that's not possible.
Can I just have a closer look at your socks?
Oh, sure you can. Oh, God, here we go. This is what there's I do.
Are they tights?
No, they're not. No, that would be Justin up there on the wall from the...
Yeah.
Okay, so here we go. Now, this is kind of a tradition of the show, and this is going to work out beautifully because we usually use the last half hour. This will be an hour of your music and the interview. So...
Wow, it's a long time.
Yes, it is. Kind of scary, huh? So here's what you get to do, though. We like to make what we call a dog's die on hot cars sandwich. You are the bread. So you get to pick a couple of your songs as the bread. And then in between your assignment, if you decide to accept it, and believe me, you would not believe the sets. And we do play the set exactly as you ask for it, whatever it may be. And believe me, you wouldn't believe. We've had Britney Spears next to Led Zeppelin. So people go out of their way. But the idea is it's a sandwich, it's a dog's die and hot car's sandwich. And pick two of your songs as the bread and then tell me what you want for the fillings.
How many songs are we allowed in the filling?
You're allowed quite a few because I've also been known if the fillings are really good to go to an hour and a half because I have a 2-hour show and the second half is new music, so I'm allowed to do what I want and nobody tells me I can't.
Cool.
It's a little dog's die and hot car's party and it's now yours. Make a sandwich for me.
Just name tunes.
You can name the tunes. So pick two of yours. You should pick one, and you should pick one of yours off the CD, for starters,
okay,
that you want as the bread. And then you get to fill it in the middle.
Apples and oranges, I'll pick.
Okay.
Do I have to pick another one?
Yeah. Yes, you do. You need the other slice of the bread.
Yeah. I'm just thinking about it. Oh,
it's a complicated concept.
Okay.
Would you like the CD? You know all the songs on? No,
Paul Newman's Eyes.
Oh, there you go.
You need to pick that.
There you go.
See, this is the thing with the songs for the middle. I'm totally rubbish with the song names. I just know
that's
it's
okay.
Like
you
track
can name
three,
the art. Well, that's okay. If you give me the name, even the name of the album and track three, we have never failed at digging out some really strange stuff. And
okay,
believe me, it's quite the adventure every week when we do this.
Okay. Which one is it?
What album?
I'd say Hounds of Love by Kate Bush.
Okay, Hounds of Love by Kate Bush. We can do that. I think somebody just did a remix of that too.
Yeah, Futurehead. Oh, well, they covered it.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Kate Bush.
I like it. It's good.
Kate Bush.
I haven't heard it yet, but I read about it in that British magazine.
Yeah. Oh, that British magazine.
There are other ones we read. We read other. By the way, I don't want anybody who listens to think that the only way we learn about British music is through NME. We read Q. Just kidding.
In fact, yeah. Since Future Heads do that, maybe the man with a child in his eyes.
Okay. Okay.
Let me think. What about?
And you can go as weird as you want. Seriously, go any place you want to go.
Okay, well, you've got to have something off Neanderthalidays.
Yeah.
John Frusciante's first solo album, Neanderthalidays, and usually just a T-shirt.
Okay.
What's
track?
Yeah, because a lot of them don't have names.
It's Untitled 18 or something.
Oh, yeah. Track number 18. It's okay. Untitled is number 18.
Okay.
And also, if possible...
Another adventure is beginning, feel it.
A song called Mascara, which is track number 5, I think, on the album.
Okay.
That's a good one.
Okay, now put some weird ingredients in there. Put some stuff in there that are going to just freak people out. Who was it 2 weeks ago that went on the disco thing and I was playing Casey and the Sunshine Band and The Hustle by Van McCoy? Who was that a couple of weeks ago that went crazy? I forgot who it was. Somebody went nuts. It was really fun. People were calling up and saying, we have the wrong radio station. We love that.
Got to put a Lone Pigeon song.
Lone Pigeon, yeah.
Lone Pigeon.
Put,
Oh, God, yeah.
What's it called? Don't you know it's true? Heaven Come Down.
Heaven Come Down by Lone Pigeon.
By Lone Pigeon. I'd say Gone for Good on the Shoots Too Narrow.
Okay. So by the Shins. Gone for Good. Mm-hmm.
Is that a UFO?
Regiment on
Air Conditioning. It's great, isn't it?
Sounds like some.
It's okay. The great thing about it, the microphone won't pick it up to any great extent. But we've recorded stuff in toilets before, so it doesn't matter. You can do wonderful filtering.
Help me somebody on My Life in the Bushy Ghosts.
Okay.
Yeah. The first track on Speakerbox. What's it called? You know the one that goes, feeling good, feeling great.
I will
feeling
find
good,
it.
Feeling great. How are you?
Can I just loop that and use that at the beginning of my show?
Yeah,
that'd be really lovely.
Of course.
That'd be great.
Of course.
He's still thinking.
Yellow Ledbetter, Pearl Jam.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
That was one of our
Pearl Jam. There you go.
Probably Soul to Squeeze as well. These are the tunes. That
Soul
we were,
to Squeeze
we
by were, the Chili
yeah,
Peppers.
Yeah, we would be like under the. We would actually hang. Probably because of the tune. We used to go down to this place like when we were kids and just. We'd have like a couple of these like really strong beers.
Under a bridge.
Yeah, and like really these like 10% beers, and we get like 2 cans each, and we go under the bridge, and we just drink them, and then we puke them up, and then we'd sing Soul to Squeeze all night.
But you didn't sing Under the Bridge. You sung Soul because you should have sung Under the Bridge. Under the bridge.
Would have been more appropriate.
You sung Soul to Squeeze.
That was a bit too
you guys
cheesy.
Were a little
that was
bit
too cheesy.
Right.
That was
sometimes I
yeah.
feel.
memories.
So yeah. God.
Can't deny the Chili Peppers. Under the Bridge is like, you know, you hear it again and again and it holds up. It's kind of scary.
Mm. Oh, maybe another Chili song for the...
Someone off California.
The biggest, you know, they're the biggest band to us. You know.
The Chili's, yeah?
They've been the band that we've kind of... We've all, you know, been. They've all been our favourite band since we were like, you know, 10.
Since we were 10.
Sorry, 12.
It's good at exaggerating the old ages.
No, it was
ages,
91. So. It was 91 because it was when Blood Sugar Sex Magik came out.
That is exactly
brother.
When it came out. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so how old were we in 91?
At 12.
12.
There's so many good tunes.
Penguin Cafe Orchestra.
Oh, of course. I can't. This is the one group of musicians, the Penguin Cafe Orchestra.
I actually own a Penguin Cafe Orchestra album, so it'll be interesting to see if that cuts on there. I know exactly who they are.
Good, good. I don't even know what to call them. What would you call them? A band? An orchestra?
You know, it's like big band meets dance meets, who knows?
I don't know, yeah. But I think that, I mean, I've got every album and I think that it's the only, whatever, yeah, group of musicians where I think every single song that they did on every album is brilliant.
Okay, so come on, you need to come up with a closer.
No, I've come up with some, but he's just finishing it off for me.
Oh, I see. So this is kind of that, yeah, right, the Zen thing.
What album have you got by the Penguin Cafe Orchestra?
It's black and it's got red type on it. That's all I remember. I don't remember. But that's okay. Do you have a song? I can find it. It's not a problem. We have an endless pool of resources to find stuff, so it's not an issue.
Okay, here's one. The sound of this is off the first album. It's called "The Sound of Someone You Love Who's Going Away and It Doesn't Matter."
great title. All right, one last one. And then I'm gonna have you do something really silly for me.
MC Hammer, Pray.
Pulled that out of the hat. Boy, you don't have to figure out those segues.
No New Kids on the Block, no.
Hanging Tough, but although as I love Hanging Tough, yeah, in my mind,
yeah,
when I heard it on the record, it was like, it's the worst, the production, the sound.
If you listen to it now, it's like a Casio keyboard kind of.
So should I not play that? Or should I play that to really scare people?
Pray.
Okay.
That's why just we pray.
New Kids on the Block.
No, MC Hammer. Pray.
No, I know. I'll do that. I'm telling you, you know, that New Kids on the Block, that might haunt you now. I won't do it.
I'm kind of confused.
Just some kind of code or something.